Hey guys, so obviously by the title you want to hear Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry by Mildred D. Taylor. Obviously you want me to read the first chapter. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to read the first chapter. I'm also going to read the rest of the book. There are 12 chapters, so that means 12 episodes. Or I might like do 11 episodes or maybe 10 episodes. I might put two chapters in the same episode. I might do that. So yeah. First, let's read the very front or the description of the book. I'm going to read right after this little segment because I'm looking for something and I cannot find it. So we're going to do something. I'm going to just like stop, and then after I'm going to like make you listen to some music because I just uploaded some new music and it sounds really good and I hope you guys listen to it. But yeah, so after this short break, I'm going to start reading the back of the book after the front of the book, and after we're going to read the last cover of the book, the little description after the first chapter. So if you guys are excited, make sure you go listen to all of my podcasts, and I hope you guys enjoy this. But anyway, let's go transition. Let's go. Hey guys, alright, so, Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, by Mildred D. Taylor. When the land to hold them together, nothing can tear the Logans apart. Logans is, I think it's the family that's inside of this book. Why is the land so important to Cassidy's family? It takes the event of one turbulent year, the year of night riders and burnings, the year of a white girl humiliating Cassidy in public simply because she's black, to show Cassidy having a place of their own in the Logan's family lifeblood. It's the land that gives the Logans their courage and pride. For no matter how others may de-guard them, the Logans possess something no one can take away. All right, first chapter. Woohoo, let's go. Little man. Would you come on? You're keeping it up and gonna make us late. My younger brother paid no attention to me. Grasping more firmly his newspaper wrapped notebook and his tin can lunch of cornbread and oil sausages, he continued to concentrate on the dusty road. He lagged several feet behind my brothers, Stacy and Christopher John, and me, attempting to keep the rusty Mississippi dust from swelling with each step and drifting back upon his shiny black shoes and cuffed his corduroy pants by lifting each foot high before setting it gently down again. Always meticulous, neat. 6-year-old little man never allowed dirt or stains to mar anything he owned. Today was no exception. You keep this keep it up and make us late for school. Mama's going to wear you out, I threaten, pulling with exasperation at the high collar of the Sunday dress Mama made me wear for the first day of school, as if the event was something special. It seemed to me that showing up at school at all on bright August, like October morning, made the running for cool forest trails and wandering barefoot in the forest pond was concession enough. Sunday clothing was asking too much. Christopher, John, and Stacy were not pleased by the clothing or school either. Only little man, just to begin his school career, found the prospectives both intriguing. Y'all go ahead and get dirty if y'all want, he replied, without even looking up from his study steps. Me, I'm gonna stay clean. I bet your mom's gonna clean you if you don't hurry up, if you keep it up, I grumbled. Ah, Sassy, leave him alone, Stacy said astonishingly, frowning and kicking Cecily at the road. I ain't say nothing, but Stacy cut me with a wicked look and I grew silent. His disposition had been arrogantly sour lately. If I hadn't known what the cause was, I would have forgotten easily that he was, at 12, bigger than I am, and that I'd promised Mom to arrive at school looking clean and ladylike. Shoo, I mumbled finally, unable to restrain myself from future comment. It ain't my fault if you gotta be in Mama's class this year. Stacy frowned deeply and jammed his fist into his pockets, but said nothing. Christopher John, walking in between Stacy and me, glanced uneasy looks at both of us, but did not interfere. A short, round boy of 7, he looked interested in troublesome things, preferring to remain on good terms with everyone. Yet he was always sensitive to others, and now, shifting the handle to his lunchbox can from his right hand to his right wrist, and his smuggled notebook from his left hand and left to his left hand and his left armpit, he stuffed his free hand into his pocket, and attempted to make his face as moody as Stacy and as cranky as mine. But a few moments, he seemed to forget what he was supposed to be grouchy and began to whistle cheerfully. There was little that could make John Christopher unhappy for a very long time. Christopher John unhappy for a very long time, not even the thought of school. I tugged again at my collar and dragged my feet into the dust, allowing it to shift back on my socks and shoes like gritty red snow. I hated the dress and the shoes. There was little I could do in a dress, and as for shoes, the imposition freedom of loving feet to feel the warm earth. Cassidy, stop that, Stacy snapped as dust billowed in the swirling clouds around my feet. I looked sharply up, ready to protest. Christopher John's whistling increased to a raucous nervous shrill, and gruntly I let the matter drop and trudged along in a moody silence, my brothers growing as pensive, quiet as I. What is the end of the chapter? I think this must be a long chapter if it's this long. Oh, it is a really long chapter. Oh, wow. This chapter's 31 pages. It's not very long, but it's very long. So we're gonna stop. I'm still on page 6, so we're gonna stop on page 10. And then we're gonna continue right after that. All right. Where did I finish? Here. Before us, the narrow, sun-splashed road, wounded like a lazy red serpent, diving in the high forest bank of quiet old trees on the left from the cotton field, fortressed by giant green and purple stalks on the right. A barbed wire fence ran the length of the depth field, searching eastward for over a quarter of a mile until it met the sloping green pasture that signaled the end of our family's 400 acres. An ancient oak tree on the slope, visible even now, was officially diving right between Logan's land and the beginning of the dense forest. Beyond the protective fence of the forest, vast farming fields worked a multitude of shared cropping families, covered 2/3 of 10 square mile plantation. That was Harlan Granger's land. Once our land had been Granger's too, but the Grangers had sold it during the Reconstruction for a Yankee's tax money. In 1887, the land was up for sale again, and Grandpa had bought 200 acres of it. And in 1918, after the first 200 acres had been paid off, he bought another 200 acres. It was good, rich land, much of it still virgin forest, and there was no debit on half of it. But there was mortgage on the 200 acres bought in 1999, and there were taxes on the full 400. And for the past 3 years, there has not been enough money for the cotton to pay both and live on it too. That's why Grandpa has gone to work on the railroad. In 1993, the price of the cotton dropped. And so, in spring of 1931, Papa set out looking for work, going as far north as Memphis, I think that's Mississippi or something. I don't know. And as far south as Delta Country. He had gone west too, into Louisiana. It was there he found work laying tracks on the railroad. He worked up the remainder of the year away from us, not returning until the deep winter when the ground was cold and bare. The following spring, after the plantation is finished, he did the same thing. Now it was 1933, and Papa was again in Louisiana laying tracks. I asked him once why he had to go away, why the land was so important. He took my hand and said his quiet way, "Look out there, Cassie girl. All that belongs to you. You ain't never had to live on anyone's place, but you live but you're own, and long as I live and the family survives, you never have to. That's important. You may not understand that now, but one day you will. Then you will see. I looked at Papa strangely when he said that, for I knew that all the land did not belong to me. Some of it belonged to Stacy, Christopher, John, little man, not to mention the part that belonged to Big Mama, and Uncle Hammer, Papa's older brother who lived in Chicago. But Papa never divided the land in his mind. It was simply Logan's land. For it, he would work the long, hot summer pounding steel, and Mama would teach and run the farm. Big Mama, in her 60s, would work like a woman of her 20s in the field and kept the house, and the boys and I would wear threadbare clothing and wash the dishes to dishwater color, but always the taxes and mortgage would be paid. Papa said one day I would understand. I wondered. When the fields ended and the gardener forest fanned both sides of the road with the long overhanging branch, a tall, amphicated looking boy popped suddenly from the forest trail and swung a thin arm around Stacy. It was TJ. Aver. His younger brother Claude emerged from the moments later, smiling weakly if it pained him to do so. Neither of the boys had shoes on. Their Sunday clothes, patched up, worn, hung loosely upon their frail frames. The Aver family shared crop on the Ginger family. Well, said TJ, hauntingly swinging from step with Stacy. Here we go again, starting another year of school. Yep, sighed Stacy. Sorry I had to cut that. Something was coming in, so I just had to crop that in sections and then after. So what I last came from was, yep, sighed Stacy. Aw, man, don't look so down, TJ said cheerfully. Your mama is really one great teacher. I should know. He certainly should. He had failed Mama's class last year, and now is returning for a second try. Shoot, you can say that, exclaimed Stacy. You don't have to spend all day in the classroom with your mama. Look on the bright side. Just think of all the advantages you got. You'll be learning all sorts of stuff for the rest of us. He smiled shyly. That's what's on them test. Stacy and TJ thrust his arms from his shoulder. If that's what you think, I don't know, Mama. Ain't no getting mad, TJ replied undauntedly. Just an idea, he quieted for a moment, then announced. I can give you a four earful about burning last night. Burning? What burning? Man, don't you tell you nothing. Barry's burning. I thought your grandma went over there last night to see about them. Of course you knew that Big Ma has gone to a sick house last night. She was good at medicine and people often call her a doctor when they were sick. But we didn't know anything about burning. I certainly didn't know about any berries either. What berries is he talking about, Stacy? I asked. I don't know any berries. They live way on the other side of the smelling streak. They come to church sometimes, Stacy said absently. Then he turned back to TJ. Mr. Lanner come by really late and got Big Mama. Said Mr. Barry was low sick and needed her help to nurse him. but he ain't got nothing about no burning. He's low sick, all right, caused by the burning he got near to death. Him and two of his nephews. And you know who done it? Who? Stacy and I asked together. Well, since you don't know anything about it, TJ said, his usual sickening way of nursing is a tidbit of information to death. Maybe I owe not telling y'all, it might hurt y'all's ears. Aw, boy, I said, don't start that mess again. I didn't like TJ very much and is stalling around in help. Come on, TJ, out with it. Well, murmured TJ, then grew silent as considering whether he should talk or should not talk. Finally, we reached the first of the crossroad and turned north. Another mile and we approached the second crossroad and turned east again. Finally, TJ said, okay, see, them berries burning was no accident. Some white man took a match up to them. You mean just lit them up like a piece of wood? Slammered Christopher John, his eyes growing big with disbelief. But why? Asked Stacy. TJ shrugged. I don't know why. Just what they done it. Just know they done it. That's all. How do you know? He smiled smugly. Because your mama come down on her way to school talking to my mama about it. She did? Yeah, and you should have seen the way she looked when she come out of that house. How'd she look? Inquired little man, interested enough to glance up from the road for the first time. TJ looked around grimly and whispered, like death. He waited for a moment for his words to be appropriately shocking, but the effect spoiled by little man, who asked lightly, what does death look like? TJ turned in annoyance. Don't he know nothing? Well, what does it look like? Little man demanded. He didn't like TJ either. Like my grandfather just for they bury him, describing all knowledge. Oh, little man replied, losing interest and concentrating on the road again. I tell ya, Stacy, man, Mr. TJ said, Morsey shaking his head. Sometimes I just don't know about the family of yours. Stacy pulled back, considering whether or not TJ's words were offensive. Lita immediately erased the question and continued avidly. Don't get me wrong, TJ. There are some really swell kids, but Cassidy's got me whipping this morning. Good, I said. Now how'd you do that? I wouldn't be laughing if it happened to you. She up and told your mama about me going up Wall Street dancing room and Miss Logan told your mama. He eyed me in disbelief, then went off. But don't worry, I got out of it. When mama asked me about it, I just said the Claus was sneaking there and trying to get some free candy Miss Cammy give about sometimes, and I had to go with him because I know good and well she didn't want us up here. But boy, did he get it. TJ laughed. Mama about warmed him out. I stared quietly at Claude. You let him do that? I exclaimed. Only Claude smiled in a sickening way. of his, and I knew that he was more afraid of TJ than his mother. Again, little man glanced up, and I could see his dislike for TJ growing. Finally, Christopher John stared at TJ, putting his short arms around Claude's shoulder, and said, "Come on, Claude, let's go ahead." Then he and Claude hurried up the road, away from TJ. Stacy, who generally overlooked TJ's underhand stunt, shook his hand. "Well, that was dirty." "Well, what'd you expect me to do? I couldn't let her thinking I was going up there because I liked to, could I? She could have killed me." "And a good riddance," I thought, promising myself that if he ever pulled anything like that on me, I would knock his block off. We were near the second crossroad, where the deep gulling lines both sides on the road and dense forest crept into the very edge of high-checked clay wall banks. Suddenly, Stacy turned. "Quick," he cried. "Quick, off the road." Without another word, all of us but little man scrambled up to the steer right bank into the forest. "Get up here, man," Stacy ordered. But little man only glanced at the raggedy red sparkles covered with brown skin and kept on walking. "Come on, say like I do." "But I'll get my clothes dirty," protested little man. "You're going to get them a whole lot dirty if you stay down there. Look." Little man turned around and watched saucer-eyed as the bus boring down him spewed clouds of red dust like huge red dragon fire breathing. Little man headed toward the bank, but it was too steep. He ran frantically along the road, looking for another foothold, finding one and hopping onto the bank. But not before the bus had sped past him, enveloping him in a scarlet haze while laughing white faces pressed against the bus window. Little man shot a threatening fist in the air, then looked disillusioned down at himself. "Well, old little man got his Sunday clothes dirty," TJ laughed as we jumped down from the bank. Angry tears welled little man's eyes, but he quickly brushed them away before TJ could see them. "Ah, shut up, TJ," snapped Stacy. "Yeah, shut up, TJ," I echoed. "Oh, come on, man," Stacy said. Next time, do like I tell ya. Mr. Little Man hopped down from the bank. "How come they did that, Stacy, huh?" asking as he dusted himself off. "How come they didn't even stop to us?" "Because they'd like to see us run it and it ain't our bus," Stacy said, balling his fists and jamming them tight into his pockets. "Well, where's our bus?" "We ain't got one. Why not?" "Ask Mama," Stacy replied, heading towards boy, barefoot pale. Replying as a tall head boy, barefoot pale, came running down the path to us. The boy quickly caught up and fell shy to Stacy. "Like, hey, Stacy." "Hey, Jeremy." It was an awkward silence. "Y'all just starting school today?" "Yep," replied Stacy. "I wish ours just started," sighed Jeremy. "Ours been going since the end of August." Jeremy's eyes were whitewashed and they seemed to weep as he spoke. "Yes, yeah," said Stacy again. Jeremy kicked the dust briskly and looked at the north. He was a strange boy. Ever since I'd begun school, he had walked with us as far as the crossroad in the morning and met us there in the afternoon. He often recruited by other children at school and had showed up more than once with white velcets on his arms, which was the result of associating with us. Still, Jeremy continued to meet us. When we reached the crossroad, three more children, a girl of 12 or 13, and two boys, all looking very much by Jeremy, rushed past. The girl was Lillian Jean. "Jeremy, come on," she said without a back glance, and Jeremy smiled sheepishly, waved a timid goodbye, and slowly followed her. We stood in the crossing, gazing after them. Jeremy looked back once, but then Jane yelled. But then Lily Jean yelled shrilly at him, and he never looked back. They headed to Jefferson David's school, a long white wooden building looming in the distance. Behind the building was a wide sports field, which was scattered of rows of gray blue beaches. In front there were two yellow buses, our tournamenter and the one that brought from the students in other directions. Allowing students awaiting the Neil morning bell. In the very center of the expanse form of the lawn, waving red, white, and blue with the Elmo confederacy emblazoned in his upper left hand corner, was the flag of Mississippi. Was the Mississippi flag. Directly below was the American flag. As Jeremy and his brothers hurried down those transport flags, we turned eastward toward our own school. The Great Faith Elementary and Secondary School was one of the largest black schools in the country. It was a small end to an hour journey, consisting of four weather-beaten walls houses sitting on bricks. 320 students, 7 teachers, a principal, a caretaker, and the caretaker's cow, which kept the wide grass lawn sufficiently clipped in spring and summer. The school was located near 3 plantations, the largest and closest by far being the Granger's plantation. Most of the students were from families that sharecropped on the Granger's land, others mainly from Monitor and Harrison plantation families. Because the students needed the fields from the early spring when the cotton was planted and until almost after the cotton had been picked in the fall, the school adjusted its term accordingly, beginning in October and dismissing in March. I wish my school was like that. If I came to school in October and dismissed in March. March is also my birthday, so I'm going to do like something for my birthday, but that's in March. A long time from right now. Right now we're in November of 2020. Today, right now is November, November 2nd. All right. With that note, I'm going to hold up just a little more. I'll do it just a minute. But even so, after today's number of the older students who wouldn't be seeing again for a month or two, not until the last pluck of cotton has been gleaned from the fields, eventually most would just drop out of school altogether. Because of this, the classes in higher grades grew smaller with each passing year. And on that note, I'm going to close it up because I didn't need a charger for my laptop because I accidentally left it on. So, I need to wrap it up really quickly. So I'm going to continue reading the first chapter. I'm going to continue reading it after. We're going to do a short segment, and after I'm going to be recording somewhere else. I'm going to be recording this at my house and not where I am right now or when I get a charger. The only one that's available is at my house. So I hope you guys enjoyed me reading this part of the book, like halfway of the first chapter. And it's kind of surprising that it took so long for one chapter, but yeah, it took a long time. So I hope you guys enjoyed this, and there's going to be a part one and a part two. This is part one, and part two is going to happen right after, when I get home, right after this one. So I hope you all enjoyed, and thank you so much for listening to my podcast. Make sure you share with everyone you know, and thank you so much. Bye.